It is Tuesday, November 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a plane carrying a popular Brazilian soccer team crashes outside the Colombian capital. South Korea's president indicates she's willing to resign because of a scandal. And we get the reaction of Cuban Americans in Miami to the death of dictator Fidel Castro. It's all ahead. At least 76 people were killed when a plane carrying members of a Brazilian soccer team crashed late Monday near Medellin, Colombia. The crash has prompted the South American Soccer Federation to cancel all activities until further notice. Condolence messages poured all over social media from many international teams and well-known players. I spoke to Celia Mendoza from VOA's Latin American division.
So far, we know that this was a private charter plane that left from Bolivia with arrival to be around 10:30 p.m. possibly in Medellin, Colombia, in the international airport of José María Córdoba, which is located in Río Negro, a location about half an hour from the center of Medellin, which is the capital of Antioquia, which is the state where they were heading for the final of the Copa Suramericana, so the South American Cup. They were actually on the plane coming from that area because of a change on the schedule. Something that we had learned in the last few minutes, they had just 5 minutes actually to landing on that particular airport. Past 10 p.m., the control tower received an emergency call from the aircraft reporting some electrical problems. Now, speculations of possible mismanage of the time and giving them the landing location in the airport has surfaced. They are saying that because it took longer to give them a runway to land, they had to circle around and they might have run out of gas. That's something that has not been confirmed by the authorities in Colombia. However, it's a possibility that is being thrown out there by some of the controllers who were at the tower during the time of the crash.
Well, certainly an investigation will be ongoing. But now, have rescue efforts been hampered by trying to get to the crash site?
It has. We're talking about an area that it has a lot of mountains and hills. And actually, last night, weather was very, very bad. They had a lot of rain. It was very dark. The plane actually crashed against a mountain called El Cerro del Gordo. And that particular location has a very, very difficult access. They actually initially requested some of the Colombians in that area to help them with vehicles that were able to manage those terrains. Fortunately, the Colombian police, the military, and everybody involved in the rescue efforts were able to get to the location. And so far, we know that the efforts took all night to try to rescue as many as five people. Actually, initially were reports of a sixth people that were rescued alive. One of them died at the hospital, according to the authorities in Colombia. But definitely the issues they encountered were more about the weather and the terrain where the accident happened. The images are showing that the plane pretty much just broke in half. It was not a fire that was registered, according to those that were there. But the impact was so strong that it was almost impossible to survive. So it's actually kind of a miracle, if you believe in miracles, for five people to survive.
Well, now, this Brazilian soccer team had met success recently, and I think, you know, they have a number of followers.
That's right. We're talking about a fairy tale that ends in tragedy, if you kind of think about it. The rights of Chapecoense as a Brazilian fairy tale because they beat one of the most important teams in South America. And if you can actually say one of the leading teams in the world, we're talking about San Lorenzo from Argentina. That was an amazing victory. They just had the images of breaking the odds. They just rise to be one of the most important teams in Brazil in the last few months, becoming pretty much a hope for a town where they live for this team, Chapecoense, a recently new team with players that are committed to the team. And going to Medellin and facing Nacional, which is one of the Tigers, if you can call it in a way, of soccer, and especially because Nacional just won two big titles in the past year, and that will be one of the teams that they would have to face during the game that was scheduled for this Wednesday, was something very important for the team. We actually have seen players posting videos before the takeoff in Bolivia, and that's something that really resonates. We saw images of all the fans in the stadium in Chapecoense just praying and crying with all their flags. And that shows you how important it was for this community, this team. They just lost 22 of their lead players during the crash. On top of that, we have a part of the executives, the crew, the team, and also at least 20 journalists that were traveling with them.
That's VOA's Celia Mendoza. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Well, Andrew, I'm sure there's a lot of reaction on social media to this tragedy.
Absolutely. And as Celia mentioned, some of the videos that the players were taking before the takeoff, there are two images in particular that are spreading around social media that are causing a lot of reaction from fans, not just of the team, but sports fans around the world. One is the last photo the team took before boarding the flight. It purports to be a photo they took on the tarmac before they boarded that flight. The other is surviving team members who didn't travel with the team. They're sitting in a locker room, head in hand, despondent over this. So those two really moving images are spreading throughout social media as really the world is mourning. It's not just soccer fans, not just sports fans in Brazil or South America. It is the world. We're seeing major soccer clubs, Manchester United, Bayern Munich, reaching out. We're seeing other sports stars like Rafael Nadal, the tennis star, offering his condolences. So a lot of people using social media to mourn this team. Here in the U.S. today, we are celebrating, we had Thanksgiving, we had Black Friday, we had Small Business Saturday, we had Cyber Monday, we had the string of different kind of commercial holidays here in the U.S.
It's amazing you can keep track of all this.
It is, and there's another one today, and today is hashtag Giving Tuesday. And this is the day where people are asked to give to charities, nonprofit organizations, maybe before you start going out and buying gifts, or maybe after you've bought some gifts and want to put some money aside to give to those in need, you can do so. So we're seeing this hashtag used across social media, a lot of organizations using this to appeal for donations, appeal to people to give of themselves and give to charity this holiday season. Not all about the presents and the gifts and the commercialization. It can also be about doing some good. So hopefully people will go out there and do some of that today.
Yeah, hopefully they will. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. A United Nations official gives a dire prediction about the Syrian city of Aleppo. The Somali election process drags on. The Ohio State suspect posted an anti-American Facebook rant prior to the attack. And North Dakota's governor orders pipeline protesters to evacuate. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A 2015 report by the World Health Organization shows that between 30 to almost 60% of traffic accident deaths in South Africa, Canada, the United States, Australia, and France can be blamed on drunk driving. While increased law enforcement and awareness of the dangers of alcohol-impaired driving has lowered fatality statistics, technology is also stepping in to keep drunk drivers off the road. A group of nanoengineers, electrical and computing engineers, have taken their combined know-how to develop a tiny tattoo-like device that provides an easy and quick way for drivers to monitor their alcohol intake. This new device detects alcohol levels in a person's perspiration and then sends the data to a cell phone or other monitoring station. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Miami reacts to the death of the late Cuban leader Fidel Castro. South Korean President Park Geun-hye Tuesday expressed a willingness to step down from office once and if the National Assembly passes a measure requiring her to do so. Park addressed the nation in a hastily scheduled televised speech. She said she would leave her future, including leaving office, to the decision of the National Assembly.
저는 제 대통령직 임기 단축을 포함한
She said, I will leave my future course of action, including the shortening of my presidential term, to the decision of the National Assembly. I spoke with VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul about Park's statement.
She said if the conditions were right, if it can be arranged for her to step down in an orderly manner so that there's no gap in state affairs and that to minimize chaos and that there is a peaceful and stable transfer of power, if these arrangements can be made, she is willing to resign. She's been under a lot of pressure in the last few weeks because of this political scandal involving her longtime friend Choi Soon-sil, who has allegedly used her connections with President Park to force a number of conglomerates and large corporations to donate monies to sports and cultural foundations. And that she is being investigated also for funneling some of that money into her own businesses. And investigations into that scandal have brought charges against Choi Soon-sil and against some of President Park's closest advisors. The president herself has been named a criminal suspect. This is the first time ever that a sitting South Korean president has been named a criminal suspect in an investigation. So a lot of pressure has been building, and there have been 5 weeks now of massive public protests in the streets of Seoul and across the country. So she finally came out today after being somewhat secluded for the last couple of weeks and said that she would be willing to resign if the conditions are right.
Are the conditions right?
This is what concerns some of the opposition. The opposition has been pushing for impeachment proceedings, and they are prepared to put through a motion this week that could be voted on as early as Friday for impeaching President Park. The parliament, the National Assembly, needs a two-thirds majority of the 300-member National Assembly to approve an impeachment motion. The opposition parties already have 159 members and seem somewhat confident that they could get the rest from her party and other independent candidates and other independent members of parliament who would go along. President Park's gambit today to them seems cynical, and they are skeptical because they are saying this is a ploy to try to push back the impeachment effort. And that the conditions that she's asking for would be for the parliament to pick a new prime minister, to pick an interim cabinet that could take over for the president after the president resigns and before new elections are held. That process could take months for the various parties to get together and select all the appropriate candidates. So it's unclear if she is being sincere that she wants to maintain stability, or this is another cynical move on the president's part to kind of delay the process.
Could she, despite her own intentions, though, could she be removed from office?
Yes. Impeachment proceedings are underway at the National Assembly. It's just a matter of when and how the motion is passed. I think at this point, the 128 members of her Senori party are divided as to whether to continue to support her. Leaders of her party this week got together and urged her to resign to preserve some of her own dignity and not to face an impeachment process. So it seems to be that she has come to the conclusion that she cannot stay in office. She is trying to still dictate the terms for how she will leave. A month ago, she had offered to give a new prime minister who would be selected by the National Assembly some of her powers, and then she would concentrate on international affairs and defense issues. And she keeps trying to maintain some sort of presence and hold on power, but she keeps negotiating it away as the pressure builds on her. Today was the first day that she openly said she is willing to resign. So it seems to be that the movement and the momentum now is set. It now is becoming a question of how and when, and not if.
That's VOA correspondent Brian Patton in Seoul. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Cubans have been paying their respects to their late former leader Fidel Castro at Revolution Square in Havana. Beginning Wednesday, his ashes will be carried eastward across the country in a 3-day procession that follows in reverse the route taken by the young revolutionary and his rebel fighters as they advanced on Havana from the Sierra Maestra Mountains in January 1959. Memorial services began Monday in the capital and in the eastern city of Santiago, where Castro started the Cuban Revolution in 1953, and where Castro's ashes will be buried on Sunday. But the reaction among Cuban Americans in Miami is quite different. I spoke with VOA's Hassel Tobias, who arrived in the Florida city last night. He tells me their reaction.
I can see different kind of reactions right now. Definitely a common reaction right now is happiness. People, most of them, at least the people who I have talked with, are happy about what happened in Cuba. They are very hopeful right now that something is going to change for good in Cuba. And they're pretty much looking the day they can come back to Cuba after many, many years living away from Cuba. They really want to come back and see how is Cuba now. But at the same time, another reaction I can see is some people are still not convinced about the changes, the possible changes that Cuba can go through. They are saying that Raul Castro still is in power right now in Cuba, and as long as the Castro regime is still there, the changes are not going to be so obvious in Cuba. So we can see happiness, for instance, but at the same time, a little bit of a realistic position about what's going on right now in Cuba.
Fidel Castro himself was 90 years old when he died. He was in frail condition. He had been out of power, really, for at least 10 years. So it's not like he was actually running the country, and yet I guess he still had this huge influence on it.
That's what people think. People believe that even if Fidel wasn't leading the country himself, but many of the decisions that Raul Castro did, and in general, the political in general in Cuba, has to go through him. And many of those decisions were not just mentioned to him, but at the same time, probably like asking for permission to him if they can implement a change or if they wanted, I don't know, a schedule and a specific day for meetings. everything, according to some people here in Cuba, at least that's the feeling they have, it still was going through Fidel Castro. But the other reaction I'm having here is some people who is saying that there is no point to celebrate, there is no argument to celebrate anything, because at the end, Castro did whatever he wanted to do. He led the country for many years. Nobody could change or realistically or drastically change Cuba while he was in power. So there is no reason to celebrate, because at the end, he did what he was planning to do. So there is no reason, according to this other group, to celebrate, because no one in the political international atmosphere could change or did change Cuba while Fidel Castro was in power.
That's VOA's Hazel Tobias in Miami, Florida. And that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States, together with Taiwan, known in the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum, or APEC, as Chinese Taipei, announced their intent to create an APEC subfund on women and the economy, which will enable APEC economies to apply for funding to support new or existing initiatives focused on women's empowerment. This year marks the fifth anniversary of the San Francisco Declaration, in which APEC ministers and senior officials agreed to take concrete actions to integrate women more fully into APEC economies. Over the last 5 years, the United States has championed a number of initiatives through APEC that build on the commitment to advance women's roles in APEC economies through compiling and analyzing data, strengthening the regional ecosystems for entrepreneurs, promoting women's health, and advancing women and girls in traditionally male-dominated sectors, including science, technology, engineering, and math, known as STEM, and transportation. This year, the United States launched a new initiative to break down barriers to women's participation in STEM-related fields. The initiative consisted of an APEC-wide research study to examine efforts across the region to increase women's participation in these fields, and two workshops in which representatives from the private sector, civil society, and governments shared best practices and lessons learned from ongoing programs. The United States also continues to support the We APEC initiative in order to identify and connect women's entrepreneurship networks in each economy with public and private sector support services and global supply chains to ultimately expand economic opportunities and regional trade. Sustainable economic growth cannot be achieved if women are unable to fully participate in the economy due to health concerns. To address this issue, the United States, together with the Philippines, launched the Healthy Women, Healthy Economies Initiative, a public-private partnership that is working to advance women's health and well-being to increase their economic participation. In addition, five APEC economies, including the United States, have launched pilot activities aimed at increasing women's engagement across the transportation sector. It is clearly in the interest of the economies in the region to integrate women into the economy. It has been proven time and again, said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, that where women are participating fully, the society tends to be more stable, it tends to be participatory, and particularly, it tends to be more productive.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.